the question of defining ourselves and defining God sounds an impossibility. How can we possibly define God when, by definition, God is infinite, God is kol yochol, God is omnipotent? Definition would sound an impossibility. But the truth is that the Novi, the prophet, the beginning of the Haftarah of Parshas Vayikra, tells us how we should define ourselves, and once we've done that, the rest falls into place. The Novi says, Amzu yotzarti li tehilosi yisaperu. I have created this nation so that they should give my praise. Not that God has an ego which needs fulfilling, which needs stroking, but rather that if we define ourselves, if we understand that our fulfillment comes by creating a relationship with God, by living as God's nation, by Tehilosi Yisaperu, by us giving over the praise of God. The Rambam Maimonides writes in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, when he's talking about the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem, of sanctifying and desecrating God's name, the Rambam writes, V'chein kol ha'poresh me'avera, anyone who desists from doing something which is wrong, oi osa mitzvah, or does something which is right, performs one of the mitzvahs, and does so, lo mipnei davar ba'olam, for no other reason in the world, lo pachad v'lo yira, not out of fear, v'lo levakesh kovod, and not because they're looking for honor, ela mipnei habirei baruch hu, but because of God. A person stops themselves from doing an avera, from doing something which is wrong, or does something which is right, purely because of habirei baruch hu, because of God. That person is kmenias yosef atzadik atzmai. It is the equivalent of the heights which Joseph, which Yosef achieved when he refused to give in to the temptation of the wife of Potiphar. And he ends by saying, Harezem mekadesh es Hashem. This person has sanctified God's name. That is Tehilosi Yisaperu. That is giving over the praise of God. If we live our life as a people with a mandate, a people with a responsibility to bring God into the world, then we define ourselves, and by definition we define God. In Parshas Kedoshim there is a pasuk. It says, V'ahavta l'reacha kamecha, you shall love your neighbor as you love yourself. And the Gemara in Shabbos tells us, Harei ze klal gadol b'Torah. This is one of the general, all-encompassing rules of the Torah, klal gadol. The Midrash then discusses which other statements in the Torah also conform to this title of being klal gadol, of being a major aspect of Torah. One of the sages, one of the Tanoim, writes, it is the Pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, the declaration of the unity of the existence of Hashem, that is klal gadol. That's an all-encompassing idea. But the other statement in the Midrash is a pasuk, Es akeves echod taseh v'abayke, es akeves hasheni taseh benu ha'abayim. Bringing the korban, bringing the offering on a daily basis in the temple, twice a day, once in the morning and once in the evening, that is klal gadol b'Torah. as a keves echod, bringing one lamb tasev abeke in the morning and the other one in the evening. That is an all-encompassing idea of Torah. Why? Because whereas the Shema encompasses the philosophy of Judaism, it tells us what we believe in. If on a daily basis, on a twice daily basis, we are putting that belief into action, that is what the philosophy is there for. That makes the philosophy real. If philosophy stays at the level of theory, of discussion, of an intellectual dispute, then it moves no further in bringing God into the world. It is not Tehilasiya Saperu. It is not defining God. It is not, therefore, defining ourselves. It is only when we take that idea of Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and live by it every day, that we can truly say that we are defining God. It is only when we withstand temptation, when we uphold a value system, when we do something with that knowledge of God, that we are truly Amzu Yotzarti, a nation that was worth being created. The Gemara at the end of Yuma, in the last chapter of Yuma, tells us that we have a mandate. We have the responsibility Sheyehei Shem Shamayim Misahei Val Yodcha, that the name of God should become beloved through us. And the Gemara gives a number of examples of this. The idea of paying people on time. We're talking about Amoraim, we're talking about the sages of the Talmud. How did they cause a Kiddush Hashem? How did they cause God's name to become beloved? By paying the butcher on time. The example that the Gemara gives about Rav. And it's not only what we do, but what we don't do. At certain stages in our life, we have to realize that even though certain things are permissible, they're still not the right things to be doing. When there was a famine in Egypt, even though Yaakov and his sons were not yet affected by it, he told them to go down to Egypt to purchase grain. For the simple reason that he put it, Lomar Tisra'u. Why do you have to stick out? Why do you have to be visibly okay when everybody else is suffering? Why do you have to be noticed for the wrong things? If a Jew is noticed because he's paying the butcher on time, that is defining God. But if a Jew is noticed because they charter the QE2 to make a bar mitzvah, that's got nothing to do with God. That's not there for the sake of praising God. That is a person who's defining themselves as distinct from defining God. That is not an action which will bring about Sheyei Shem Shamayim Mis'ayev Al Yadcha. That is an action which Yaakov Avinu would have censored, to which he said, Lamot Yisrael. As Rabbi Zaltzbach mentioned on Shabbos, there is a pasuk in Parashas Devarim, to which Medrash says, when God told us that we should turn in the direction of Tzofin, which literally means to the north, the Medrash says that there is a second meaning, a deeper meaning, in the use of the term Tzofin, Hatzpinu Atzmechem, to keep ourselves hidden. There are certain things we should do openly, but a Jew has to know that those things that are not centrally defining as a Jew should be done on a lower profile. Alan Dershowitz, in his book, which by its very title tells us why we disagree with it, it's a book called Chutzpah, he writes there that the Jews in America need to define themselves as first-class Americans and first-class Jews. And until they do, they'll never be recognized by all the other people in America as equal citizens. We need to define ourselves as first-class Jews, is correct. But we don't need to define ourselves as first-class Americans. True, we don't want to be the recipients of bigotry and hatred and the lower standard of justice. But we don't need to be able to do everything that the rest of the world is able to do. We are in Golus, we are in exile. And one of the factors of being in exile is that we keep a low profile, because this isn't our world yet. Our world is a world where there is a Beis HaMikdash. Our world is a world where there's a Kohen Gadol, where there's a Sanhedrin, when Yerushalayim is built, that's our world. And in that world, we can hold our head high. But while we are in America, however sweet the Golus is there, we need to be first-class Jews, but not necessarily first-class Americans. Not if it comes at a cost. Rabbi Wein writes that when he was the head of Kashrus at the OU in America, he got an irate letter, one Motzah Pesach, the end of Pesach, about the standards of Kashrus that the OU has for their brand of coffee. And it proceeded to berate the OU for having lax standards. The letter in and of itself is perhaps understandable, but it was written by a religious inmate in a prison. And one has to ask whether his standards were across the board up to scrutiny, or whether it was just kashrus that he was concerned about. The Gemara in Bava Basra has a series of midrashim, of agadic stories, which were written by Rabbi Bar Bar Chona, the most famous of which is where he writes that we were traveling on a ship and we saw a huge fish. Sand had collected on the back of this fish and a meadow of grass had grown there. We thought it was dry land, so we landed on it. We lit a fire, we baked and cooked our food there. But when the back of the fish got hot, the fish turned over, and had our boat not been nearby, we would have drowned. That's what Rabbi Bar Bar Chona writes. It's a story which is a parable. The parable is that sometimes in exile, we see something that appears to be dry land. We see something that appears to offer safety and security. It appears to be a place where we can make our home. And we enjoy ourselves. We cook, we bake. We feel free there. And for a while, we enjoy this freedom. Until we make the mistake of thinking that this existence is one that we really are quite happy with. We're quite satisfied with this existence. And at one stage, that illusion turns over. And we are thrown back into the sea. And if not for Torah, we would be lost. We have to understand our obligations. We have to see ourselves as being the people of God under all circumstances. I'd like to share with you a few stories about somebody who was an English-speaking godel, an English-speaking tzaddik, who lived very recently, and who gives us a yardstick by which to measure our life. Reb Shimon Schwab was born in Frankfurt and moved first to Baltimore and then to Washington Heights, who died in the 1990s, in the last winter of his life, as the Rav of a large Jewish community in Manhattan, he called in one of the wealthy members of his community. And he said to him, I don't have much time left in this world. And I want you to know that I'm going to end up in Gehenna. I'm not going to end up in Gan Eden. My end will not be one where I will be escorted into the Garden of Eden. Because my yeshiva's deficit is close to $1 million. And most of it is in unpaid salaries to the teachers there. And since I am the rabbi of a community that teaches Torah and Derech Eretz, that teaches that alongside the study and the teaching of Torah, it's got to be accompanied equally by midas, by putting into action that which we've learnt. Where is the Derech Eretz that I haven't paid these teachers? And when I'm asked to give din v'cheshbon, when I'm asked to give an accounting of my activities, I don't have an answer. And therefore I'm going to Gehenna. Please take me out of Gehenna. That's what he told this wealthy member of his community. This person gave the matter some thought and agreed to cover in installments the entire deficit. The last payment was made Friday before the annual dinner that the shul had. The yeshiva dinner was on Sunday night, and the next evening Reb Shimon Schwab passed away. When we define ourselves because we want to define God, then God defines us. When we live our lives doing that which is right, then God does what is right for us. On a separate occasion, Reb Shimon Schwab, towards the end of his life, suffered terribly from arthritis. His son came in one day and saw that his father, Reb Shimon Schwab, was standing while he was talking on the phone. And he was obviously in a state of discomfort. So he said to his father, what are you doing? His father said, I'm on the phone to Reb Moshe Feinstein. And Reb Moshe Feinstein is the God of Hador. He's the leader of the generation. So his son said, but he's not here. He's not in the room. You don't have an obligation to stand. To which Reb Shimon Schwab said, you're right. But how can I sit down when I'm talking to Reb Moshe? That's a sensitivity of understanding who people of value are. And therefore it's not surprising that he was able to author the kinah, the lament that we read over the destruction that took place in the Holocaust. It takes a person with a sensitivity to God, a sensitivity to people, a sensitivity to true values to be able to author such a kinah. At one stage he was called in by the Inland Revenue, the IRS in America, for an audit. They couldn't believe that a person living on such modest means could give so much money to charity. And they were sure there was something fraudulent taking place. He sent an accountant, a member of the community, to represent him. And at the conclusion, the IRS agent said that never in all of his years had he met anybody who was so meticulous in reporting income. And he wrote a letter to Reb Schwab. The agent of the Inland Revenue wrote a letter to Reb Schwab, saying that Reb Schwab's honesty had restored his faith in humanity. That the name of God should become beloved through our actions. That's Reb Shimon Schwab. That's what our mandate is. At the same time, there has to be a sense of balance as to what is right and what is wrong. At one stage there was a campaign to try and release a religious Jew from jail. And Reb Shimon Schwab refused to have anything to do with it. He said, what this particular Jew has done is a chilul Hashem, It's a desecration of God's name. And other Jews will suffer as a result. Let him stay in jail. I don't know the particulars of the case, but it's quite clear that Rav Shimon Schwab would never have taken this decision if it wasn't the correct thing to do. We don't have to automatically respond with an instinctive knee-jerk reaction. We have to think things through. Some things are worthy of our time. Some things are so valuable that we have to put everything else aside in order to pursue these things. And some things are actually incorrect, however much emotionally they would seem to be the right things to do. At the same time, we shouldn't feel that there's nothing that we achieve at this moment in time which is worthy of achievement. We shouldn't feel that because we haven't reached that level that everything that preceded it had no value. When we look around and see how much chesed is done, is performed, when we look around and we see how much Jews do for other Jews, we should use that as an inspiration. We're not starting at ground zero. We're not starting with no background, with no achievement. But we have to do more than that. We have to push ourselves further. That's why we're here. Tihilosi yisaperu. We are here to bring God into the world. In the third volume of Michtav Me'elyahu, Rav Dessler has an essay on Kiddush Hashem Hamadumo V'Ho'amiti, how to sanctify God's name. Hamadumo means an apparent, a fantasized version of Kiddush Hashem. And then the Ho'amiti, there's a real way to create Kiddush Hashem. How is that? So Rav Dessler says that basic Kiddush Hashem starts by correcting the Chilul Hashem within ourselves. By being aware of God's constant presence. By living our lives knowing that God is there on an ongoing basis. That is the beginnings of Kiddush Hashem. As we mentioned in the Rambam earlier. Kiddush Hashem can be generated in private. Kiddush Hashem doesn't require an audience. Kiddush Hashem is being aware of God's existence, of taking the Shema Yisrael, that was the Klal Gadol Batera, and translating it into Esakeves Echod Taseh V'Aboikev, Esakeves Hasheni Taseh Benhu Aboim. That's Kiddush Hashem. Shamshon Fol Hirsch writes that as a description of how the Luchos, how the two tablets of stone on which the Aseret HaDibros were written, the Torah describes them as Mizeh Mizeh Him Ksuvim, which literally means they were written from both sides. On either side they were written. But he explains that it means much more than that. What it actually means is that whatever situation we find ourselves in, through and through we have to be Jews. We cannot be Jews superficially. We cannot be Jews who are visible as Jews from one side only. We have to be Mizeh U'Mizeh Heim Ksuvim. In whatever situation we find ourselves, whether good or bad, whether in Golus or in Geula, whether on duty or off duty, we have to be Mizeh Mizeh Heim Ksuvim. And he writes that otherwise we become the opposite of the Maranos. Maranos were Catholics on the outside and Jews on the inside. There's a danger in our generation, he writes, of being Jews on the outside and non-Jews on the inside. The value system that we are pursuing, that which is important to us, not that which we do. What we do, so we keep halacha, we're doing all the right things. But what's important to us? What are those things that we really feel pleasure in doing? The Rambam once again writes in Hilchos Rotzeach, not the place that you'd expect to find this statement, in the laws dealing with murder. The Rambam writes, V'chayei balei hachochmo mevakshel, that the life of those who are balei hachochmo, who've mastered real, true wisdom, and the lives of those who are mevakshel, who seek real wisdom in life, V'lei Talmud Torah, without the study of Torah, K'misa chashuvim, it's as if they are dead. People who value Torah in life value it to the extent that if they don't have it, they're no longer alive. Perhaps it's not that surprising that the Rambam puts it in Hilchos Rotzeach, in the laws of murder, because that's what we would be doing to ourselves. How did it happen? How is it that we, as a nation, have taken on board other values? That other things have become important to us, become sacred to us? How did it happen? The Medrash tells us that Eicha was said three times, at three different stages in the development of the Jewish people. Moshe said, Eicha, Esa levadi torchachem umasavchem verivchem. How can I carry on my own your burdens? How can I be the one that brings each and every Jew to getting what they desire? I can't do it on my own. Because Moshe sees a people who at some stage will become preoccupied with themselves, will see their needs as uppermost. And when there is a clouding of the vision, when people no longer clearly see why they are here, then even Moshe says, Eicha, how can I support the entire people when individually they pursue their own selfish aims? When individually, what they are looking out for is themselves. This is continued by Yeshaya Hanavi, who says, Eicha hoysa mezeina kiriya nemona. How is this faithful city of Yerushalayim become a zeina, become a prostitute? How is it possible for Yerushalayim not to be standing up for the values of justice, the city in which Tzedek Yolin, in which justice reigned? Now it's a place of sheker, of deceit. It's a place where social justice no longer has its seat, where the responsibility towards others no longer exists. It has spread from people being preoccupied with their own gashmias, with their own sense of well-being, and it's spilt over to the extent that if my own well-being comes at the cost of another Jew, then so be it. If it means that I get what I want and somebody else loses out, then that's the way it has to be. We reach that level of Eicha. Finally, Yirmiyahu says, Eicha Yoshua Vodod. When the pursuit of Tehilasi Yisaperu, of bringing God in the world, is not uppermost, then it totally clouds our vision. And idolatry makes its way into our lives. And if we no longer have a use for the temple, then God will take it. If we no longer need the Beis HaMikdash to be the crowning achievement of the Jewish people, if we no longer venerate the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the inner sanctuary, as the place which we worship alone, then God takes that sanctuary from us. Why have it? As a building, there are nicer buildings in the world. If that's what it is, a tourist attraction, there are other places people can visit. If it no longer is the place of centrality, if it's hemid tselem behechol, if we manage to put up an avodah zarah, an idol, in the Beis HaMikdash itself, in the temple itself, then at that stage, echo yoshva vodod, we may as well sit abandoned in mourning, because we obviously have no use for the temple. And in this clouding of vision that Moshe, Yeshaya, and Yirmiyahu saw, we have a throwback to the original Echo, to the Ayeko, that God says to Adam at the end of the first sin, Ayeko, how have you got to where you are? How did you lose the plot so badly? How did you manage to bring Irvuvia, confusion, into the world? How is it that you lost your way? Once again, within the Ayeka, there is the mandate that we have the potential to be on the straight path. We have the ability to live a life of nobility. It's not something that's beyond us. God isn't asking us to achieve something which no generation could ever pull off. God is asking us to be our true selves. But at the same time, God is giving us Musa. God is chastising us for the fact that we're not there. We could be. We could be. But we're not. And in order to uproot Echa, we have to get back to that moment of clarity of vision that the entire Jewish people had at the foot of Mount Sinai, when they were all able to declare in unity, B'leiv Echad K'ish Echad, all able to declare, but not only to declare, but declare together, Na'aseh V'Nishma. When they understood their responsibility to others and their responsibility towards God in this world, that was the moment of clarity that the Jewish people had. That dispels Echa. If we want to know where we should be headed, we should be headed to Har Sinai. We should be headed towards being able to say Na'aseh V'Nishma with every other Jew. Rav Hutner writes that the reason that became difficult at the time of the second exile is because of the difference between the cause of the destruction of the first temple and the destruction of the second. He writes that at the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, their philosophy changed, as we said. They traded the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the inner sanctuary, for idolatry. But in doing so, they were still worshipping something. It was Avodah Zarah. It was foreign worship. Worship nonetheless. It was Kabbalas Oil Malchus Sheker. It was the acceptance of a yoke which was Sheker, which was lies. But it was nevertheless the acceptance of a yoke. It was the knowledge that I am not the master of my own destiny. And because there was still an element of avodah, of service, because there was still an element in the Jewish people that said, there are greater powers out there than I, even though it was sheker, nevertheless it was Kabbalas oil. It was a people who were still able to listen to outside sources. And therefore when prophecy continued throughout the first exile, they were able to rebuild a second temple, because their minds and hearts weren't closed yet. They didn't believe that they have the solution to every problem. They believed that the solution was outside of themselves. But when it came to the destruction of the second temple, the cause was Perek Oil Malchus Emes. They threw off the yoke of truth. And even though it sounds like the same thing, whether you accept the yoke of that which is untrue, or whether you throw off the yoke of that which is true, they actually are very different. Because if you substitute it by something, then there's still purpose. Purpose is wrong, but there's still purpose, there's an understanding. But when you throw off everything, when you believe that truth can be decided by you alone, and there is no absolute morality, there is no absolute truth, there are no absolute values, it's all relative. It's a liberal society where everybody decides for themselves what's right and what's wrong. Where as long as it can be sustained in book form, doesn't matter what it says. It can be anything. We're on your own. They're not absolutes anymore. At that stage, when we're Perek Oil Malchus Emes, when we're not pursuing truth in any shape or form, then we wander into a state of exile, from which, by tasting of all these philosophies, all of these relative values that we read about, we discover the hard way that there is an absolute truth. Because we taste each one of these philosophies in turn. Spanish philosophy in the 15th century, the German philosophy in the 19th and 20th centuries. We taste all of these philosophies. And only after we've tasted them do we realize that being Pyrrhic oil malchus emes, that discarding truth in favor of relative values, is a shambles, becomes a nightmare. And unfortunately, if we don't realize it when there is a temple, then the only way for us to realize it is when we discover it ourselves the hard way. There is a posuk in Tehillim, Ki olecha haragnu kol hayom. We have died for you every day, all day. The Rashba, one of the Spanish Rishonim who lived in the 14th century, he writes, V'chi efshar lihoreg b'chol yom. Is it possible to die every day? What does the pasuk mean? Elo shebachol yom she'anu kerim b'kriya shema. Every day when we read the Shema and we say, uvachol nafshecha, that we are prepared to serve God. Uvachol nafshecha, to the extent of our very life. Umaskimi melkach. We don't just say it. We think about it. We mean it. Hareyu ki'ilu haragnu ba'isei shah olav yizbarach. It's as if we died al kiddush Hashem. By accepting to die, it's as if we had died al kiddush Hashem. And in a booklet which the Nesiva Shalom wrote after the Holocaust called Kuntras Haruga Olecha, a pamphlet written for those who died Olecha because of you. He lost a family, lost a community. He writes, Valpi ha-dvarim ha-eile, and with this insight into Ki Olecha Ragnu Kol Hayom, Nuchal Lahovin B'miktas, we can have a partial insight into the Parsha Hastuma Shel Hashoya, into the closed book, into that part of history which is hidden, the Holocaust. She'inyan HaYisurim Shel Chevli Moshiach, the terrible pain that we have to go through before the arrival of Moshiach, It is brought about through tikkun gomor of mesiras nefesh al klal Yisrael. If we want to bring about that absolute value of bringing God into the world so that everybody can see God, if we want to arrive at that point in history where it won't just be amzu yotzarti, where there will be one nation which tihilasi yisaperu, which will recount the praise of God. But if we want to reach the moment where the world will declare God, when it will become a time of kimona ha'oretz deo, kamayim layam b'chasim, if we want to reach that point where the entire world will be filled with the knowledge of God, then we, as a people, have to first reach the level of mesiras nefesh of Klal Yisrael. We have to show how important this value is of bringing God into the world. It's so important that we're all prepared to give up our lives for it, as we were prepared at that original moment of clarity at Mount Sinai. Because at Har Sinai it was obvious to us, so obvious to us, where the truth is and what the absolute value is, that sight unseen we could say, Naaseh v'nishma, we'll do it. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter if it costs us our physical life, we'll do it. We were able to achieve that moment of clarity. If we want to get back to that moment of clarity, if we want to dispel the clouds that were created through Eicha, then we have to reach the level of actual Mesiras Nefesh of Klal Yisrael. We have to be able to put our lives on the line. In order to achieve Ki Olecha Horadnu Kol Hayom, there will come a time in history that will be fulfilled literally. That is an insight into Churban, into destruction, into tragedy. We don't know necessarily why things happen, but we know what goal they are moving towards. They are achieving the revelation of the absolute emes, of absolute reality, for which only that is worth living and nothing else. Having said that, we are in a situation of exile. We are in a situation where we've been betrayed, where we've been abandoned, where we've been left in a hostile, unfriendly world. Rabbi Yaakov Emden lived in the 1700s, wrote, having come through the tragedies of the Middle Ages, the existence of the Jewish people amongst the nations of the world is a greater miracle than Yetzias Mitzrayim, than coming out of Egypt. Because Yetzias Mitzrayim was one nation. Yetzias Mitzrayim was one moment in history. And our continued existence amongst the nations of the world is universal. And the persecution is universal. And the Chovas HaLevavos writes, if a person wants to see nisim, miracles, in their own life, similar to those performed by God at the time of coming out of Egypt and of Mamad Har Sinai, let him look with a truthful eye at how the Jewish people survive amongst the nations of the world. Our inner values and outer behavior are different from theirs. If we manage to survive throughout this Golus, if we manage to be a people, to be a nation, with a history, with a past, with a message, with a way of life, with a sense of values, then that is a greater miracle than Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because this is a miracle
where anybody would have told you it's impossible. It's just Mitzrayim. It was a one-off. This is impossible. And if you speak to any survivor of the Holocaust and ask them what they thought the Jewish world was going to look like from their perspective in 1946, even the greatest Maamin, person who had the greatest amount of faith and who came through with their faith, people, Jewish people, how can they ever rebuild? And we look around at a Jewish world which both in Gashmias and in Ruchnias, from a physical perspective and from a spiritual perspective, have opportunities that never existed for 2,000 years. The abilities to live as a Jew, the abilities to live a life in freedom. It's an opportunity that never existed for the Jewish people as a whole, and it exists for us today. It's a nace, it's a miracle. And what the Jews have managed to achieve with that miracle, from those pitiful few remnants, the Ud Mutzal Mi'esh, the firebrand that escaped the destruction, how they built places of Torah, how they built yeshivas, how they built communities around the world. We take it for granted. But 60 years ago, even in countries like America and Great Britain, it was not on the map. There was no way, never mind that the Jewish people were going to be numerous ever again, but there was no way that religion was going to flourish. Not in those countries. Maybe there'll be one town, there'll be a Bnei Brak somewhere. It'll be the token religious town for the Jewish people. But in America, in England, there should be religious life. There should be schools. There should be kashrus. There should be the opportunities to live anywhere, freely, easily, as a Jew. No one could have seen that. And now that God has done that for us, we have to respond in kind. We have an obligation to make use of the fact that we can be a Jew anywhere and be that Jew. We have an obligation to be a member of a community, to attach ourselves to Torah, to live a life that has inner values, not just outer observance. The Medrash tells us that Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov described the place where the temple is in three different ways. Avram called it a har, called it a mountain. Yitzhak called it a sodeh, a field. And Yaakov called it a bayis, a house. Each one settled the place of the Beis HaMikdash a little bit more. A mountain is a place which is inhospitable, impenetrable. Mi yale bahar Hashem. Who are the few who can climb the mountain of Hashem? Not many. Avram had to first conquer the mountain. And then, when it was brought out into the open, it says, Vayetze Yitzchok Masuach Basodeh. In Yitzchok's case, it was a place that was accessible. It was a field. But it was still away from normal habitation. It wasn't in the city. It was Vayetze Yitzchok. He had to go out in order to come across this place of God. Because although it was now within reach, the masses were still not there. It was only in Yaakov's case, when Yaakov awoke from his dream and said, "In zekim beis elikim." This is the house of Hashem. Yaakov created the third level to that structure that took a mountain and built it into a house. And from then on we had a Mishkan, a sanctuary, a Mikdash, a temple accompanying us. We had Ein Zekim Beis Elikim. We had the house of God with us. But then it was taken. Chazal tell us, Mishnah and Tainis, that there are five things that took place on Tisha B'Av. Two, of course, refer to the destruction of the first and the second temples. One is that the Mokim HaMikdash, the place where the temple once existed, was ploughed up, ploughed over, to fulfill the verse Tzion Kesoda Tichoresh, that Tzion, place of Zion, will be ploughed over, fulfilled that curse that had been predicted to occur to the Jewish people. What does it mean? Why is that one of the five things that we mourn over on Tisha B'Av? We understand the destruction of the first and second temple. But in what way is the ploughing over of the site of the temple, when it's already in ruins, in what way is that the equivalent of the destruction of the temple? Why is it one of the five things? True, it happened on Tisha B'Av. Big deal. The temple had long been destroyed. We were in exile. Who cares if they take ruins and they turn them into a field? Why is that of such paramount importance that it's one of the five things that we have to mourn over? The answer I once heard from Rosh Shapira is that whilst there are ruins there, so when you walk past, you see what there once was. You see the desolation, and perhaps in your mind's eye, you can reconstruct what once must have been there. But if it's just a field, if it's just a soda, then you walk past and you don't even realize there was anything. The idea of the use of the word soda is that we went back one level. Yaakov created a bias. That bias was completely destroyed. We went back to the level of Yitzchok. We went back to the level where it's accessible. But it's out. It's far from human habitation. It's not in the city anymore. We have to go there. We have to build in that soda a bias. It's up to us to do. Because the soda itself bears virtually no markings of the fact that there were ever even ruins there, never mind of the fact that there was once a temple. Tzion Kesoda Techoresh is something that we mourn over on Tisha B'Av, because all the signs that once were there, of the people that preceded us, are virtually eradicated. And therefore, it is our duty to bring it back. I will close with that same Haftarah that I opened with. We started by saying that our mandate is Amzu Yotzarti Liti Losi Yosaperu. Our job is to recount the praise of God. Our job is Seyehei Shem Shomayim Misahei Val Yodcho, to bring God into the world on a daily basis by simple, ordinary actions. That's our job. And therefore it's within the reach of each and every one of us. It's a job that doesn't require tremendous background, tremendous input. It's a job that requires us to be aware of why we're here. And in doing so, if we define ourselves by defining God, if we define ourselves as the nation which takes up the challenge of Tilasi Yisaperu, then we will merit the final posuk in that Haftarah, where God says, Ki Goal Hashem Yaakov, that God will redeem Yaakov, Uvi Yisrael Yispire. Not only will we be redeemed, but we will be the praise that God recounts. If we merit to live to the standards of Tilasi Yisaperu, then God will not only redeem us, he will recount our praise.